Welcome to the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast. My name is Muhi Khwaja with American Muslim Community Foundation. Today we're really honored to have on Ashley Fay from Refugee Services of Texas. Welcome, Ashley.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Of course. You know, this podcast is all about learning about other nonprofits and kind of where the individual professionals kind of got their start and how they landed at the places where they're at and just challenges in the industry. So really excited to have an opportunity to learn more about RST, the amazing work that you guys do. Why don't you start off by telling a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm the development director at RST. I've been there for a little over 2 years. And just before that, I moved from Arizona, where I previously worked as development director at a global health NGO called Esperanza. And prior to that, I've worked with very diverse communities, both domestically and internationally. I've done some refugee resettlement work, as well as worked with human trafficking survivors, which is also part of what we do at RST. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of work in India, and I'm still involved with some of the organizations that I partnered with over there. And I've worked with both teens and adults in the mental health system and the criminal justice system.
Wow. So, I mean, just looking at your background and kind of your journey to RST, you know, this work in development is all about like mission, alignment, passion. So tell me a little bit more about like what speaks to you about this opportunity and the work that RST does.
Sure. So I've actually always been on the programmatic side. I've done case management and worked really directly with the populations that we've served. It's been in the last maybe 5 or 6 years that I've gotten into development, and I really enjoy that. I enjoy the advocacy piece, the storytelling piece, and trying to uplift the voices of those that we serve so that they have the power to tell their own story with just the right tools. So I look at it as a really fun challenge, and it's exciting to build the relationships that we get to build every day with other organizations, with corporations and foundations and individuals, and just tell them about this exciting work.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely have to mention our mutual connection. One of my good family friends from Canton, Michigan, originally, who now lives in Houston, Omer Khan. And I'm glad that he connected us and told AMCF about Refugee Services of Texas. At that time, I didn't know he was on your board. But more recently, we kind of unearthed that. And I'm really excited for just being able to partner with RST and share the work that RST is doing. So if you have your elevator pitch or even just like, you know, program highlights that RST offers, what would those be?
Sure. So we are the largest resettlement agency in Texas, and we serve 6 sites all throughout the state. So we're in the Rio Grande Valley, Houston, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, and Amarillo. And we also provide really comprehensive services to a wide variety of populations of displaced persons. So we do everything from pick clients up at the airport when they're arriving from refugee camps. We have their apartments set up for them. We try to make their dollars stretch really far because, of course, they're really trying to make ends meet in the beginning. And we provide case management, job placement, with the goal to is for them to become self-sufficient as quickly as possible, and to do that with dignity and with some trusting relationships in place that they wouldn't have otherwise. So services are very individualized. We do ESL, trauma-informed counseling. So it's definitely comprehensive. And then we also serve, I mentioned trafficking survivors. We just started a program for asylum seekers, which is really exciting. There's a huge need for that kind of a service in Texas. So we've been able to recently, just over the last year, implement that. And then we also serve asylees and those with special immigrant visas. or SIVs, and those are the folks from Iraq and Afghanistan who are coming as a result of having served the U.S. troops in their home countries. They have a target on their back as a result of doing that, and so they're resettled here for their service. So we work with all those groups.
Right. And then, you know, I'm sure there are dozens, if not hundreds, of success stories through the years. So in terms of, you know, being able to help people get on their feet, seeing them go through having basic needs met, and then after that, just kind of being more comfortable in transitioning to a new lifestyle and experience, and whether that's through employment or education, and kind of then really achieving that American dream. And I know that statement is now somewhat convoluted with, you know, the current political atmosphere and all the different challenges that minorities face. But what would you say is kind of like the silver lining in these moments when you're helping these families?
Sure. So it's been a very interesting time in resettlement. As you have kind of alluded to, the number of refugees has gone down dramatically. At the height of refugee resettlement, we were resettling 220,000 in the U.S. And over the past 4 years, especially, that number has gone down to record lows every year, from 45,000 to 30,000 to 18. And now we're at 15,000 is the new presidential determination. And so there's definitely a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment right now. I think that the silver lining is that people are mobilized now more than ever to support refugees. If they do support refugees, then they are very supportive, and they know that now is the time that this population really needs our support the most. So we've had a tremendous amount of support. As a result of that, we've been able to start our asylum seekers program. We've been able to expand our program for unaccompanied minors, which I haven't mentioned. We served over 200 last year, and that program is expanding this year. So even in the midst of these very difficult times politically, as well as due to COVID, we've had some really incredible support.
That's great to hear. And, you know, this may be a generalization, but, you know, Texas is a very red state, and it is also known for its Southern hospitality, right? Mm-hmm. So where do you kind of see support coming from? Is it from a diverse segment across the state? Is it typically from people who want to help refugees in particular? Or do you feel like your work kind of transcends across party line?
Historically, I would have said yes. I started in resettlement in 2006, back in Phoenix. And that absolutely would have been the case. Now it's unfortunately not so much. And that's part of what we're really focused on, is trying to do education and outreach and let people know that this is not a partisan issue, that it's always been bipartisan. And at the end of the day, it's a human rights issue and nothing else. And trying to combat those stereotypes about refugees draining our economy or being terrorists and these kinds of things. We try to provide accurate information so that that's not the case. We see some support across party lines, and it's really interesting operating around the state as well, because you have places like Austin, which is a little bit more liberal, and we have a lot of support there. Somewhat the same, to a lesser extent, I would say, but to some degree in Dallas. And then up in Amarillo, you have a more conservative audience. And so our approaches in all of those different locations are different, so that we can meet the community with where they're at. But I will say that we have gotten support to some degree across the board, and there are supportive individuals who are welcoming these new neighbors everywhere.
That's great to hear. For for I think there would be a really good opportunity, and I know some of the work that even AMCF and RST are trying to work on are just building opportunities within faith communities. So how's the response been from the religious community across Texas?
Yeah, that's something that we're really working to develop. So over the past 2 years, we've really fleshed out our development department and just kind of tried to diversify not just our funding, but also just our base of support and form those community relationships. It's something that we've been focused on. And so I think a lot of our support comes from faith communities. We're involved with a variety of faith communities, and we want that more so to represent our clientele. So many of our clients are Muslim, and many have actually been resettled on the basis of religious persecution. And so I think it's really important that the support base that they find here is representative of the populations that they come from.
I think you make a really good point there. And I think one of the challenges as well, maybe not with RST, but other national organizations that I've seen is, or even regional organizations, is sometimes their board leadership, their staff leadership is not directly representative of even their client base. But I'm really glad to see a diverse board and team at RST. So kind of tell me more about like the organizational culture and kind of the makeup of how you guys are doing that right and making a difference there and what it means to the clients as well.
We have about 140 staff members all across the state, and about a third of them, I believe, are former refugees. And so that's really important in just providing us insight and creating meaningful relationships with the people that we serve. I think within the offices, we speak like 37 languages. So it's a really fun place to work. And of course, individuals are coming speaking 8 and 9 languages. It's really amazing. And then over the past 2 years, also, we've really intentionally built up our board from a small board of six who were pretty homogeneous and all came from Dallas. And now we have representation from across the state. We have two former refugees on our board, and they are really diverse in all the ways that we talk about. And so I do think that it's really important to have that representation.
So tell me about a day in the life of Ashley being a development team staff member at RST.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit different now because of COVID, so everything's virtual. Normally, outside of these times, I'm able to travel quite a bit, which is fun, and I go around the different sites that we have. And gosh, every day is so different. It's a lot of developing relationships. It's a lot of drinking a lot of coffee with potential partners. Yeah, I right here. it's just really trying to form those authentic relationships, whether they be with faith communities, with potential donors, with corporations. I have an amazing team that we've been able to build up over the last few months, even during COVID. So we have a full-time grant writer now, so I oversee grants. We have three development associates, which is really exciting, who are able to do more of that on-the-ground relationship building. That I'm not able to do when I can't travel. So we have development associates in Houston, Austin, and in Dallas. And then we have someone who helps administratively. We have someone over communications. So I see those different aspects of development. And we've really taken advantage of being able to host events virtually during this time, and they've been really successful. So we've been doing a lot of event planning, and that's been fun. Over North Texas Giving Day, which was in September, we had a series of three events where we had one of our asylee staff members do a Zumba class. So that was fun. We had a couple hundred people tune into that. So that was a good time. We did a film screening and had some incredible speakers as a part of that. And then we also have something called Salam Suppers, which is a model that we use both in person and now virtually, where we are able to just kind of give a presentation, but also have more of an intimate, informal conversation with people about resettlement. And we have something similar for trafficking as well, if that's their area of interest, where we have speakers and we just do Q&A and talk about the issues, and they feel comfortable asking questions that they might not otherwise with another audience. So yeah, that's a broad answer, but every day really is just something new, and it's taking advantage and of opportunities and trying to think creatively about how to tell these stories and engage people in them.
Well, I think two things I want to highlight from your response, and one is just the tremendous aspect of having a team, a development team, yeah, doing all this work, right? And I think that goes to show just the importance of infrastructure and being able to have a marketing plan, a communications plan that ties into the development plan and the strategic plan overall. So if you can, kind of, what's the process that RST uses to kind of then implement these plans as well?
Sure. So we're actually at the end of our 5-year strategic plan. And as you can imagine, that was created during a very different time and a very different political environment under different leadership. And so I think in large part, it has stayed relevant, but we're excited to just now be launching into strategic planning for the next few years. And then out of that will come a more enhanced development plan. Something else that we're adding to our infrastructure is advisory councils, and we're really excited about that. Yeah. It'll sort of be almost an extension of the board a little bit, but we'll have those starting in Dallas, Austin, and Houston in November. And so we're going to be engaging people that are really passionate about this issue and that want to help us spread the word about the work that we're doing. So implementing these plans through this incredible team, both staff and volunteer that we have, is really essential.
Yeah. And then you mentioned a little bit about like different webinars and events that you've been hosting. So one of the things I'm excited about at AMCF is being able to do like a joint webinar with RST and kind of target the Muslim community across Texas to learn more about the work that you're doing. So in terms, I know like you've done some outreach events at different mosques in the past, but what are you hoping for? Like what would, say, the strategic plan, if it had a segment on like interfaith development or focusing on religious communities to support RST, in an ideal state, and if you had all the staffing and opportunity and funding and everything like that, what would that look like for you?
I think it would look like very mutually beneficial relationships across the board. I want to offer our services to the faith communities that we partner with. I want us to be a resource for anyone that they're involved with. We're always happy to host events, private events, do film screenings or talks, brown bag lunches, tours, whatever the case may be, tabling. So we want to be there to serve the community. And we also hope to provide a wide range of opportunities for the Muslim community and faith communities in general to get involved with us, whether it's through donating, whether it's through volunteering, attending events, promoting the work that we're doing. I think there's so many different ways for faith communities to get involved. And we just really want to take the opportunity to again spread the word and provide that knowledge and education. And the more help that we can get in doing that, I think the better off we'll all be. So we're really excited to get involved with the community more.
For sure. And then, thinking about this in like a partnerships category and just collaborating with other nonprofits or government institutions and everything in between, who are some of those partners that make your work a lot easier?
So RST is primarily federally funded, and that percentage is decreasing due to diversification and also just because as the number of refugees dwindles, so does our funding. And so we are receiving some state support now for a trafficking program, which is really exciting. And just over the past couple of years, we've been able to form some great partnerships with some local corporations and foundations. One of our board members is with Facebook, and we have a great relationship with Facebook. We've had some support from Oracle and some different foundations across the state, Simmons Foundation, Amarillo Area Foundation, so many, and there's so many in the works, so much potential. And then we work with a lot of partners on the ground. We work often with law enforcement, especially with our trafficking program. It's really that coordination is really important to do our part with victim identification and in providing services to trafficking survivors, and just other agencies and local coalitions. The list just really goes on. But again, kind of mutually beneficial relationships. We provide ESL free to the community, and so we have free space for that here in Dallas. So it just there's so many partnerships that we have that we couldn't do this work without.
Yeah, and then if you had an opportunity to just thank a donor, what would you want to tell them?
And we do. We reach out to our donors every week. We're all contacting donors, and we want to tell them thank you so much for your support. What you're doing makes such an impact. Of course, the dollar amount, yes, that matters, but over our last event, we would see, we saw $5,000 donations come in, and we saw $5 donations come in. And those were so meaningful too, because we know that that is a vote of support. And our clients really need that. They have gone through so much in their home countries prior to coming here, whether they are refugees or asylum seekers or unaccompanied minors, whatever their case is, it kind of by definition has some trauma involved in it. And they're finally here. Against all odds, less than 1% of refugees, of displaced people, actually get resettled as refugees. So
Wow.
they have gone through a lot to get here, and for the community to show their support, whether it's through donating or volunteering or advocacy, I think that's just huge emotionally for them and for the staff that are out there on the front lines every day too. So we're so appreciative.
Nice. Now, in terms of just kind of challenges that you see, whether it's across other agencies that are doing similar work or just like nonprofits in general, what do you feel are ways that staff members or nonprofit entities themselves can kind of overcome these hurdles? And this is just generally speaking. So again, whether that's like with staff retention issues or with being able to fundraise during COVID-19 or any host of challenges that nonprofits may face, what are your thoughts?
Well, I know for us, we've stayed very mission-based and client-centered, and I think overcoming any kind of challenges, whether they be political or due to COVID, I think that the success that we've had really has stemmed from that and staying focused on what we're here to do, so that we don't get discouraged and we still see light at the end of the tunnel and we still see our clients thriving, and we celebrate the successes that we have. We remain grateful for the support that we have. I think it's important to get creative, whatever your issue is, whether it's staff retention or it's increasing your donor base or whatever the case may be. We have we've learned a lot in a short amount of time. We had never really done virtual events before, and our last one in September brought in donations from every single state in the country, as well as six additional countries.
Wow.
And so it was really beyond our expectations. We've taken the opportunity to make our Salam Supper format that I mentioned virtual. Mm-hmm. We've started a book club where we have the authors with us every other month. And so that's been great education and something sort of tangible that people can do. And I think once they really learn about the issues, then they want to get involved and they want to advocate. So it's in some regards, it's a slower time here in this country. And in some regards, it's the time to really get to work and take advantage of these new opportunities that we have and think about fundraising and nonprofit management in a new way. But we're excited about that, and we're excited about the challenge, and we view it as a challenge and less as a problem to be overcome.
Sure. Yeah, I think definitely that resonates and would resonate with a lot of people who are part of nonprofit organizations during this time. So I want to talk a little bit more about you and your family's preference on where you give your zakat and sadaqah and just general philanthropy. So if you don't mind, would you be able to share your three favorite nonprofit organizations? And of course, we're assuming RST is on that list already. So,
Of course, Refugee Services of Texas is definitely the place where we donate the most. And I think there are two more that we're really involved with. I'm on the board of Kimia Foundation, which is a human rights organization. It is based here in Texas, and they do work internationally as well as locally here in Dallas, serving trauma survivors. And they have a model that incorporates counseling, yoga, and kickboxing for women that have endured trauma. And actually, it's been a fun partnership because one of our RST clients has been able to take advantage of that pilot program this year. So that's
nice.
So Kimia Foundation, and then one of the first organizations that I really got heavily involved with was Her Future Coalition. And that is an organization that is, it works in India to combat human trafficking, but it provides job skills to women coming out of trafficking situations and to women living in red light districts. So back in 2009, I think, was my first trip to India with them. And I went with their founder, Sarah, and I worked a little bit there in the red light districts. And that really changed my perspective on everything and really guided my professional career. And so ever since then, I have worked with them in some capacity, just as a volunteer, sort of pro bono consulting, as I've gotten into the development aspect of things. But they have a lot of really exciting things going on too. And so that would be my third one that I support a lot.
Awesome. And then in regards to just some best practices that maybe you'd like to share that RST does or that you've learned in the past that you feel other nonprofit organizations, like a lot of the charities that are in AMC's nonprofit directory, some of them are just starting out and some of them are long established organizations. So what's some advice that you would want to give to some of these nonprofit leaders?
As far as fundraising, I think, you know, I don't look at my job as fundraising so much as I do relationship development. And that's why I love it so much. And it's very authentic. There's, I don't have an end game in mind, if you will. I really just, I want to get to know the person and let them know about this exciting work and see if they have an interest in plugging in, and match them with an opportunity that's meaningful for them. So I think just those authentic relationships are essential. You know, we have gone to a lot of lengths to make sure that we take care of our donors and we operate ethically. I am working on my certification as a certified fundraising executive, and that is really what that means. It's a long process to go through, but I think it's important to assure our donors that we operate ethically, and where you say your funding is going, that is where it's going. And that takes into account things like overhead, right? And just some of those best practices as far as donor engagement and gratitude and transparency. So I think, you know, looking at those types of things, whether or not you have a CFRE on your team or not, that basic level of knowledge and practice should be there for the good of the donor and ultimately of the client.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that AMCF does for the nonprofits that we work with is we've been having this Social Impact Accelerator webinar series. And the last session was actually on year-end giving, keeping and growing your donors. So it talked a lot about stewardship, a lot about cultivation, and these same tidbits, like we had the CFRE listed as a resource for people to learn more about. And I've tremendously benefited from Association of Fundraising Professionals and just being in that network, presenting at the conferences and learning at the conferences and being involved with my local chapter. So
I have as well. That's been really important. And engaging with other networks as well and other nonprofits. I think sometimes nonprofits, they can, I don't know, be competitive, I guess, for lack of a better word, but really there's so much work to do that we engage really well with community partners. There's another one here, Human Rights Initiative, HRI, okay. That's another one that I support. And they work with asylum seekers just like we do. And we hosted a clothing drive together a couple weeks ago. So nice. I think that's something else too. And it just broadens your network and it broadens your knowledge base. So I always encourage that too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what was it last year? $450 billion of philanthropy. There's plenty there for everyone. And I think, you know, obviously I think you're such a talented resource and really thankful for you sharing your time and knowledge about RST, and hopefully other people will learn more about RST and contribute and support. So, you know, any closing thoughts that you want to share about AMCF or RST?
So I thank you for having me today. We have our webinar that we're co-hosting on December 16th at noon Central. So I encourage people to sign up for that. We're going to be looking at donor advised funds. And so I am excited for that date. We have a couple fun things coming up. So if anyone is interested, rstx.org is our website. We are participating in the largest Islamic arts show in North America on December 5th and 6th. Built out of Houston, and we're a sponsor of it this year. They've allowed us to host a room of refugee art. And so all of the proceeds from that room will go back to the artists themselves. And it will be an auction. So I'm really excited for that. And then one of the organizers, actually, Dr. Khawaja Azimuddin, he is a refugee himself from Pakistan. And he recently wrote a book called The Boy Refugee. And he is our next book club author that following week in December. So we have a lot of fun free events coming up. I encourage you to check out our website and feel free to reach out. I love chatting to folks and seeing how they're interested in plugging in.
Awesome. Well, this has been really insightful for me. And again, just thank you so much for being on and looking forward to doing a lot more work with RST as well.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.